Parsha Vemor is packed with many different types of mitzvahs. I'd like to start in the middle. And that is in probably of all the sections of Emor, the one that gets most airtime, shall we say, which is Perek Kaf Gimel, the Parsha of the Moadim. And interestingly, the very first question that relates to the Parsha of the Moadim is, what is the Parsha of the Moadim doing in Parshas Emor? That is to say, this is the laning for a number of days of Yom Tov, and it goes through all the special days, the Shalosh Regalim, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Spiros HaOmer as well. And the very simple question, therefore, is, what is this section, or are these mitzvahs, doing in Parshas Emor? In fact, what are they doing in Chumash Vayikra? Chumash Vayikra, as far as we know, and it's referred to as Toras Kohanim, it discusses the mitzvahs that relate to the Mishkan, to the Korbanos, specific to the Kohanim. These Moadim are not specific to Kohanim. Not Pesach, not Shavuos, not Sukkos, Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippur. And therefore, in a sense, the question couldn't be simpler. This could be in Chumash Shemos, it could be wherever. But what is it doing? How does it find its place in Chumash Vayikra? An interesting Shaila. And this question actually is addressed by the Ramban. And his answer needs a good deal of digesting. But Ramban says that actually there is, or the reason why these Moadim are mentioned, or the Moadim are mentioned in Chumash Vayikra, there is a Taras Kohanim connection. There is a Mishkan connection. And that is that there are special korbanos that are brought on each of these Moadim. They are the Musafim. And because the Moadim have special korbanos, I mean, this is the side of the Moed with which we are unfamiliar. When we think Moadim, we think the Mitzvah, we think Matzah, we think Sukkah, we think Lulav and Esrog, we don't think korbanos. But when everything is as it should be, an equal part of the Moed are those korbanos and take place. And therefore, by virtue of these Musafim, that's why these Moadim are mentioned in Taras Kohanim. Okay, there's just one problem. And that is, if the reason why the Moadim are mentioned in Chumash Vayikra is because of the Musafim, if you actually look where the Musafim are mentioned, it's in Chumash Bamidbar, in Parshas Pinchas. There's always two Sifrei Torah taken out. The Maftir always comes to Parshas Pinchas. So it's an interesting situation because it's for the because of the Musafim that the Moadim are mentioned here, but the Musafim themselves are not mentioned here. Well then, says Ramban, the reason why is, once again, this brings us back to the mitzvahs as they are presented to Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar. And there are certain mitzvahs which do not apply in the Midbar. And without going into too many details, one of those mitzvahs, says Ramban, is Musafim. Musafim for the Yomim Tovim is something that applies only in Eretz Yisrael. And that being the case, they only get their full presentation, their full expression, and full discussion as we're Erev entering Eretz Yisrael, which is already in that later corridor of Chumash Bamidbar, Parshas Pinchas. There's already been wars relating to Eretz Yisrael. Having said that, says Ramban, there is a reference to the Musafim here, at the very least a reference, not a full discussion. Because the Torah says, with regards to these Moadim, V'hikravtem Yisheh Lashem, you shall bring a korban for Hashem. And that is a very general, albeit, but nonetheless, specific reference to the korbanos, to the Musafim. And thus we have, a very interesting balance, you could almost say, between the pure and the applied, between the concept and the practice. In principle, what ties these Yomim Tovim to Chumash Vayikra are the Musafim, and that's why they're here. Having said that, since practically the Musafim didn't come in until a later point, they won't be mentioned fully until later on. And that's the balance that's struck in that way. So says Ramban. Interestingly, other Mefarshim, quite a different approach, explain the flow or the continuum of the subject of Mawadim here in Chumash Vayikra as essentially a translation or a transition, shall we say, from space to time, in the sense that the Chumash Vayikra relates to the Mishkan, and the Mishkan is the holiest place for Bnei Yisrael. In the Midbar, the Mishkan, in Eretz Yisrael, the Beis HaMikdash, that's the sanctuary. That's the Mokum Kodosh. The year also has its holy places. It has its holy times. They are the Moadim. In other words, the association here of the Yomim Tovim to Chumash Vayikra is that, having discussed the halachas that apply to the holiest places that we have, we then transition to the halachas that apply to the holiest times that we have. And it's very interesting that it's actually the same word features in both, because the Mishkan is called the Ohel Moed, and the Yomim Tovim are Moadim, and a Moed is a meeting, and therefore the Mishkan is a place of meeting, and the Yomim Tovim are times of meeting. But that is the flow of the subjects there, according to those other Mefarshim. So be that as it may, we have Perek Kaf Gimel of Chumash Vayikra gives us the Moadim. And I'd like to focus on one aspect of this Perek, which is the mitzvah of Arba Minim, which is in Perek Kaf Gimel, Pasuk Mem. And interestingly, these are things that we speak about, of course, when it comes to Sukkot, but as we get closer to Sukkot, the focus of the discussion tends to be more about the halachas of the Arba Minim, and possibly their price. But in terms of the psukim and the parshanut, that's something that we take the opportunity to do when it's Parshat Shavua, and we're far and away from the actual shaking of the lulav, and all we have before us are the psukim. Needless to say, ultimately, the two meet. But there is plenty to say. And we begin by the Torah's reference to the mitzvah itself. What's the act? What's the deed? Well, the Torah says, "Ulekachtem lachem b'yom harishon." You shall take for yourselves. And that itself is a question. What does that involve? How do you take? What do you do? Where do you take them from? And where do you take them to? We talk about shaking lulav. Is shaking the same as taking? Certainly, the basic mitzvah is really just to pick them up, just to take them in hand. Ulekachtem lachem b'yom harishon. One's already fulfilled the mitzvah on the Torah level. That's why people turn the esrog upside down. You don't want to fulfill the mitzvah before you've said the bracha. You want the bracha beforehand. Okay. Now, there are four items mentioned: pri etz hadar, kapos tamarim, etc. What we know as the arba minim. The question is: do they all need to be taken together? Once again, here we have minhag. Minhag, of course, says absolutely yes, we take them all together, and that is the ideal way to perform the mitzvah. That's the hidur mitzvah, lekichatama, to take them all together. However, me'ikar adin, as far as the actual Torah mitzvah is concerned, you do not need to hold them all together in order to fulfill the mitzvah. It's perfectly acceptable to pick them up one by one. You can first take the lulav, then take the esrog, then take the dasim, then take the rabbis. By the time you finish, you've taken all of them, and that's the mitzvah. So again, the minhag is they're all taken together, but the basic mitzvah on a Torah level could even have them one after the other. So says the Gemara in Maseches Menachos, Daf Kaf Zayin. But there's a fascinating stipulation which is mentioned in the Rambam and other Rishonim and Paskin and Shulchan Aruch. Even as it's true that you can fulfill the mitzvah if you take them one after the other, that's only if they were all there before you when you started to take them. In other words, if they're all there in front of you, you can pick them up one by one. But if there's only one there and you pick it up, and then another one comes in and you pick that one up, so then you're not Yotze even on a Din Torah level. So it's an interest, a very specific circumstance, a very specific situation. They can be one after the other. You can take them one before the other, as long as all four of them are there, placed before you. Now, we have mentioned on a number of occasions from the Beis Medrash of the Vilna Gaon that there is the concept that we call Ta'ame HaMikra, the Neginus, the Ta'amim. The way the psukim are sung, the way that they're leined. And the Vilna Gaon on a number of occasions demonstrates that the Ta'ame HaMikra, what we call the trop, the cantillation, exists not only for musical purposes, to teach you how to lane, but also for commentary. The Ta'ame HaMikra are their own form of perush on the words that they are accompanying. So that's a very interesting it's a principle. In fact, all of a sudden you look with new eyes. I would say we now take note of the Ta'ame HaMikra in a completely different way. If you look at the Ta'amim accompanying the words that describe the mitzvah, Ulekachtem Lechem Bayom HaRishon, so you will see that on the words Ulekachtem Lechem, you have those two crescents that are facing each other, half crescents. And the Ta'amim have names. Those two crescents are called Kadma ve'Azla. Then, on the words Bayom HaRishon, so for Bayom you have that perpendicular, that right angle, and then you have the diamond on the Rishon. That right angle and the diamond is called Munach Ravi. And I think it's possible to say, based on the Yesod of the Vilna Gaon, that these Ta'ame HaMikra are actually alluding to the halacha as is paskened by the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. Namely, you don't need to take all four minim at the same time. You can take them one after the other, but they all need to be there before you. Because if we go back to the Kadma Va'azla, what is the meaning of the term Kadma Va'azla? Kadma means before, and Azla means to go. Meaning, you can take each of the minim, Kadma Va'azla, you can take them one before the other. They don't all have to be together, but they do have to be munach ravi. They need to be all four of them placed before you. So that's an interesting possibility based on the Gaon as an allusion from the Ta'ame HaMikra. Okay, at any rate, our minhag is that we take them all together. Not only do we take them all together, we bind them together. That's called igud. However, as we know, we don't bind them all together. We bind three of them together. And then one of them is just held together. That is, the esrog is held together with the others, but it's not tied together. It's only the hadasim and arabas that are tied with the lulav. Okay, again, this is minhag, this is the way l'chatchila, but it is also alluded to in the pasuk. How so? And this is pointed out by the Torah Tamima in his Sefer Tosefes Bracha, which is a separate volume of his chidushim, aside from the Torah Tamima, very prolific writer. In the Torah Tamima, it is often the case that you learn a great deal about any pasuk in front of you when you're aware of how psukim generally are written, because then you can see, is this in keeping with the norm? Is this a departure from the norm? We look at our pasuk, and it says, Ulekachtem b'chayim b'yom harishon, and then it lists off the four things, priyetz hadar, kapos tvarim, anafes avot, arvei nachal. You have your four species. But there's something unusual. And that is the rule when the Torah has lists, says the Torah Tamima, is that it will list them one by one, and then the letter Vav will feature with the last one. Lahavdil, and with the discretion, it's similar to the way we would use the word and when we have a list of things. Such, and the A, B, and C, and so on and so forth. For example, when you have the Shvatim are referred to, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, VeYehuda, and Yisachar, Zebulun, Uvin, Yamin, it's the last one that gets the Vav. And so too, in Psukim we had a few weeks ago, the stones, the names of the stones on the Choshen Mishpat, all the lists are three at a time, and the Vav comes just at the end. Odem Pitada Uvarekes, Leshem Shavo, the Achlama, and so on and so forth. That's the norm. And set against the norm, now we come to consider our pasuk, which says, Ulukachtem lachem bayom arishon. And here we go. Number one, priets hadar. Number two, kapos tamarim. So that's the esrog, then the lulav. Number three, va'anaf eisavos. And number four, va'arve nachal. So we've broken from the norm because we haven't listed eight, one, two, three, and four, but it's rather one, two, and three, and four. So it's neither here nor there. We have two vaps. And that's, as we said, quite unusual. So what are we to learn from this? Says the Torah Tamima, but this really is an allusion to the way the minhag is, in the sense that you have the final two species have a vav, because that means that the final three are now connected. You have, number one, pri etz hadar is its own thing. But then you have kapos tamarim, va'anaf eisavos, va'arvei nachal, lulav and esrog, lulav and aravos and hadasim. So the vavs serve to connect those three and disconnect them from the other four, and that really gives us our minhag, that as much as they're held together, it's only the lulav, hadasim, and aravos that are tied together. So it's very interesting that as much as we have the Iker Din Torah, really, but even the minhagim are a product and can be discerned within a very close reading of the pasuk. Okay, so having discussed the four minim as four, let's take a look at them one by one to see how they come to be what they are. The first is pri etz hadar. Now, pri etz hadar, as we know, is an esrog. But how do we know it's an esrog? Well, this is one of the Rambam's famous examples of what's called perush mikubal. That means that pri etz hadar could potentially mean many things, but we have an oral tradition of the pri etz hadar, halach lemoshe misinai, that the pri etz hadar is an esrog. Now, that doesn't stop the Gemara from demonstrating this from the words pri etz hadar. How do you get an esrog from the words pri etz hadar? Rashi talks about this. Rashi says, from the Gemara, that the word hadar, these are his words, hadar be'ilono, mishono l'shono. The word dar is taken from the word dira. It lives. Where does the esrog live? It lives on the tree, meaning longer, right? It's interseasonal in that way, longer than other fruits. So it's a liver. It has a dira there on the tree. That's a chiddush, because the word hadar is all a description. For Rashi, the hay of hadar is that it. It's not actually part of the word. The word is really only dar. The hay is there because you need a hay at the beginning, functionally. So that's quite a chiddush. And that's not the only chiddush, or that's not the only drasha. That the Gemara has a number of drashas that relate to understanding how the pri etz hadar is an esrog. Rashi gave us hadar be'ilono. The Gemara says something else. An additional drasha, that the esrog needs a lot of water. Godel al kol mayim, which affects its halachas in other areas as well. Anyone's familiar with the sugi at the beginning of Kiddushin, formidably long Tosfos there. It needs a lot of water. What's that got to do with pri etz hadar? So the Mefarshim, Rishonim even, the Gemara is associating the word hadar with hydra, which is water. In other words, the yesod that we see here is that, and the Gemara does this on a number of occasions. The Gemara will explain the word hain as in keeping with the Greek understanding. The hain means one, and so on and so forth. And of course, what do we mean when we say that we darshan a pasuk in Lashon HaKodesh from a different language? Rather, says the Rashba, what it means is that all the languages originated in Lashon HaKodesh, and therefore, if you know how to, in a sense, trace the language, you can see that something, there's a certain connotation with Lashon HaKodesh, which was really carried into another language, and you can bring it back. And therefore, hain in Greek can be one, and hadar and hydra is also relates to the word hadar. In fact, there is quite a fascinating application of this idea, which is a chiddush. I've been searching for it for many years. Found it last year, Baruch Hashem. I heard it from my father, Zichron Levracha, but the makor did not recall. One of the mitzvahs that relate to kohanim, they're not mentioned in this week's parsha, actually in Chumash Bamidbar again, is Birchas Kohanim, Duchening, what we call in English. And there's a bracha that the Kohanim make before they duchen. Ashe kedushan b'utzosav, b'kedushas shel Aaron, v'tzivanu l'vrechas amo Yisrael ba'ava. So So that is a very unusual nusach for a bracha. It's not your straight Asher Kedushanu. That's number one. Asher Kedushanu B'Kedushasa Shel Aaron, as we know. And number two, we throw in the word Ba'ava at the end, which we don't normally do, even though, you know, depending on who you are, you should do all mitzvahs Ba'ava. But we don't talk about it normally. But this mitzvah, we do talk about it. And there are halachas about that as well. The Kohanim and the Kahal need to be on good terms with each other. So the question is, where does the pasuk say that the mitzvah needs to be done Ba'ava? It just says, Kosev Baruchas, B'nei Yisrael. One of the great Italian gedolim of the 1700s, his name was Rabbi Eliezer Papau, and he's famous actually as the author of a sefer called Pele Yoetz, but he wrote a number of svarim. And another of his works is called Elef Hamagen. And in the sefer Elef Hamagen, says the Pele Yoetz, the reason why we say that the mitzvah is Levarech Esamo Yisrael Ba'ava is because the Torah represents the mitzvah by saying Kosev Baruch Hu Es Bnei Yisrael Amor Lahem. Now, normally the Torah says Emor, right? Like Emor Lakonim. But here it says Amor. Says the Pele Yoetz, Amor is Ava. Right? Amor in Italian is Ava. And that's a fascinating example. He's there for the Torah says Amor. Say it to them, Be'ahava. And that becomes part of the Nusach of the Bracha. Ad Kedei Kach. So this is Rashi's approach to Priyetz Hadar. It's descriptive. Hadar, you can tell that it's an etzer because look at the word hadar. It describes the fruit and it lives on the tree for a long time. And when you find the fruit that lives there long enough, that you'll find your etzer, and that's how you know the Torah described it. The Ramban, on the other hand, understands that the word hadar is actually the Hebrew word for esrog, meaning it's the name of the fruit. An apple's called a tapuach. Actually, that's not even so pashut, but whatever. Grapes are called anavim and olives are called zesim. And the esrog is called Priyetz Hadar. And moreover, and here you have to watch very carefully, as far as we're concerned, etrog is a Hebrew word, but it's not true, because the word etrog does not feature anywhere in Tanakh. So that makes it not really, certainly not a Lashon HaKodesh word. It's actually an Aramaic word. Esrog is an Aramaic word. And in fact, the way that we can see that is if you look at Unculus. And Unculus translates into Aramaic. And commenting on the word Priyetz Hadar, says Unculus, Esrogin. Esrog. It's Aramaic. Actually, what's very interesting about this Unculus is that all of the ways the Torah describes it, Priyetz Hadar, Kapus Tamorim, Anafei Sevoz Avinachal, Unculus translates as Esrogin, Lulavim, Hadasin, and Aravin. That's very easy Unculus. Anyone who'd like to get initiated into Unculus but is somewhat daunted, I'd recommend starting with this pasuk. It's very easy. But that does tell us, aside from anything else, that the word esrog is actually an Aramaic word. And what does esrog mean? It means hadar, in the sense that hadar is something that's beautiful, something that's desirable. That's what hadar means. And that's what esrog means in Aramaic. And we find this as early on as Parshas Bereishis, where, with regards to the Eitz Hadas, where it says that Chava saw that the fruit was desirable. She saw it, Nechmad Ha'Eitz. And on the word Nechmad Ha'Eitz, Unculus again translates, Umerageg Ilana. Merageg is from the word Etrog. And therefore, says the Ramban, we say that an Esrog, Priyetz Hadar is an Esrog, it's the name of the Esrog. It's not to be taken as a description, as far as Pshat is concerned. That's with an iron can shift.
It is with an iron, but it probably is related.
Right, every Aramaic word is related to Hebrew, ultimately.
But it means the same.
Right. Desire. Right. So that's with regards to Priyetz Hadar is gives us Esrog. Moving on, Kapos Tamarim. Now, Kapos Tamarim is the branch of the palm tree. Now, what's interesting here is if you look, and we say Kapos Tamarim, but if you look in the Pasuk, it's written slightly differently in the sense that the word is spelled Kaf Pei Taf, without the Vav. Now, the Mefarshim take note, when there's a word that should, or we'd expect to be written with a Vav, but it's written without a Vav, and very often what it means is it gives a connotation of singularity, because without a Vav it's really Kapas, which is one. So the question is, what do you make of a word where we know that we're meant to pronounce it in the plural, kapos, but it's written in the singular, kapas? So is it plural or is it singular? The answer, says Rabbeinu Bachya, is yes, because it has aspects of both. That is exactly what a lulav is. After all, if the word kaf is somehow a reference to a branch, and if it says kapos tamarim, then maybe you should take more than one lulav, because it's a plural, but we know that's not true. How do we know that one only takes one lulav? Because it's written without a vav. In the singular, it's one thing. But it's still pronounced in the plural, because we don't want to misunderstand that perhaps all you need is one leaf, and it's also kapas tamarim. And therefore, the blend of the singular and the plural, written kapas, pronounced kapos, means it's one entity but has many parts to it. And that's the lulav as we know it. It's the one branch, but it has many leaves. Okay. Moving on to the hadasim, anafes avos. How does that give us hadasim? Well, the word avos here, and this is the Gemara says, again, avos with an ayin, means braided. And therefore, you're looking for some type of branch which is whose leaves are braided. And that's really the form, and that's what people look out for in the hadas. It's got to be meshulash in that way. It looks as if it's braided. Interestingly, by the way, the Gemara states that there is another plant which is also braided, whose leaves are braided. It's called a hirduf. Now, we've never heard of it, but there it is. It's also braided. And the Gemara says, if all you have is this description, how do you know that the answer is a hadas and not this other braided branch which is called, whose leaves are braided, called a hirduf? And the Gemara says an amazing thing. And that is because the branches of the leaves of that hirduf are serrated. They're prickly. And it makes it very uncomfortable to hold. So says the Gemara, Derachea Darchei Noam, the ways of the Torah are ways of pleasantness. That means that if the Torah gives you a functional description whose leaves are braided, and you have one plant which is pleasant to hold, another which is unpleasant, you know which one the Torah is referring to. Derachea Darchei Noam, arbiters here in the world of halacha, so much so that it really seems what the Gemara is saying is, if you would take a hirduf, as if to say you were prepared to brave the prickles, you would gain nothing. It absolutely is, by definition, not what the Torah is talking about. And that itself is a chiddush, and part of a broader discussion about the concept of Derachea Darchei Noam, as it impacts and can even arbiter in halachic questions. But in any case, so we have the anaf, we have the hadasim, but as we know, there are three of them. There's three hadasim. But where do three hadasim come from? The pasuk says, anaf eis avos. Rabbeinu Bachya says the word avos means threefold. And because the Torah used almost like a double expression for the branch, anaf is a branch, and eitz is essentially a branch. I mean, every branch is from a tree or from a whatever. And therefore, the fact that it says anaf eitz avos means the anaf is avos and the eitz is avos, as if to say it is the leaves are threefold, but there's also three of them. And that's how we get three hadasim. Both the anaf and the eitz are avos, with an ayin, are threefold. Okay, that leads us with the arvei nachal, and arvei nachal are the arovos. They're the willows, and we take two of them, and that's very directly comes from the plural of arvei. The minimum plural is two. So this is something of a survey, again, from many different vantage points of Parshanut with regards to what we know as the Arba Minim and how they come to be what they are and the amount that they are in our set of Arba Minim. Having said that, and what we have said so far is basically the halacha, but it is not the halacha as unanimously concurred with. When we take a lulav and an esrog, and three hadasim, and two arovos, that is the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael, the Tana, Rabbi Yishmael, and we paskan like him. However, as the Mishnah tells us in Masecha Sukkah in the third perek, his viewpoint is disputed by Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that basically you take one of each. You've got your lulav, your esrog, you have one hadas, and one Arava. What does he do with Anafi Sovas and Avi Nachal? The Gemara works it out. But that's his opinion, one of each. But we don't pass like Rabbi Akiva. And we're not aware of anyone else who ever did. However, it is possible to discern that there was at least someone who paskened like Rabbi Akiva in this regard, and it's very interesting to see how this comes out. As we know, in Rabbi Akiva's time, there was the rebellion of Bar Kokhba against the Roman Empire. Rabbi Akiva, at least initially, was very supportive of the Bar Kokhba revolt. It said that he would carry Bar Kokhba's shield, and he was the one that coined the name Bar Kokhba. Darach Kochav mi Yaakov, the star shoots out for Yaakov, who really saw great promise. And the point is, there was great promise. I mean, every generation must have someone. If Mashiach can come in any generation, that must be that every generation has a person that it could be. And Bar Kokhba was that person, but Mashiach can't come in a vacuum. And the generation wasn't worthy, and Bar Kokhba himself soured at a certain point. Bar Kokhba became Bar Kuziva, and as we know. But originally, in the early stages, the revolt took a while. And for the first period of time, as far as I know, even a couple of years, it was very successful. Alarmingly so, as far as Rome was concerned. And so much so, that as we know, it was the minhag, quote-unquote, that whenever something momentous happened, the occasion was celebrated by coins that were minted. I mean, coins last. Certainly back in the day, that will have that some type of permanence. And in fact, in the early days of the Bar Kokhba revolt, they minted victory coins. And we have some of those coins. And on the one side is a Jewish soldier. And the other side is the Abraminim of Sukkos. There you go, the Jewish Torah thing. It's a religious army. And on that side of the coin, there's a lulav, an esrog, one hadas, and one arava. So that's very interesting. Because clearly what that tells us is that, and we only really know what Rabbi Akiva thought about Bar Kokhba, namely that he could be the one. No one ever says what Bar Kokhba thought about Rabbi Akiva. But it's not hard to guess. As far as Bar Kokhba is concerned, Rabbi Akiva, he's the Rebbe. He is their religious leader. And therefore, notwithstanding the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, who says that you should have more than one Adas and more than one Arava, it's very clear that in Bar Kokhba's army they had one of each. Because if that's the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, that's good enough for them. And that became their halacha. So that's a very interesting, that moment where they paskin like Rabbi Akiva for understandable reasons. So, having discussed the mitzvah of Abraminim, again, taking the opportunity to do so from a vantage point of Parshanut, let us now move backwards in the Parsha of the Moedim, Perkaf Gimel, to the mitzvah, what we call the mitzvah of the day in Yonah Dioma, and that is Sfiras HaOmer. Parshas Emor will always be in the time of the Omer, plenty to say about Sfiras HaOmer, and that's in Perkaf Gimel, Pasuk Tes Vav. The well-known pasuk, "Usvartem lachem imachras haShabbos," count for yourself imachras haShabbos on the second day of Pesach, as we know, "Miyam beichem asur matnufa sheva Shabbosos tamimos tihiyen," and that becomes for us for these 7 weeks that we count the Omer, the mitzvah Sfiras HaOmer. Okay, now the Rambam, who discusses the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, interestingly, in not in Hilchos Tefillah, but in Hilchos, in Sefer Korbanos, or more correctly, in Sefer Avodah, in Hilchos Tmidim Musafim, because the Omer was brought as a Korban, and the counting took place then. And that's where we have four halachas of the Rambam at the end of the seventh parak of Hilchos Tmidim Musafim about Sfiras HaOmer. And the final halacha, says Rambam, he says you've got to count, and gives a few halachas, and then says, "V'tzarich levarech, b'chol laila," you have to make a bracha every night. Bracha to Hashem, l'kein v'cholam, asher k'dishanu t'zav t'zivanu al Sfiras HaOmer, kodem sheyisvor, before you count. Now, on the one hand, it's a very easy halacha to read and understand, and we know it to be true, and everything seems fine. But that actually is part of the problem. Because the Rambam discusses all mitzvahs within the context of Mishnah Torah. But he doesn't, as he describes, each mitzvah tell you, you have to make a bracha before you do the mitzvah. The Rambam has already told us, he has a set of halachas about brachas called Hilchos Brachos. And that's where the Rambam says, before you perform a mitzvah, however you define that group of mitzvahs, you make your bracha. So it actually becomes rather difficult to understand why, if the Rambam is already established in Hilchos Brachos that you make a bracha before you do a mitzvah, so why does he need to almost emphasize or reassure us, seemingly, that the Sfiras HaOmer is no different? I mean, why would I think it's different? It's a mitzvah like other mitzvahs. Then I have my rule, make a bracha before a mitzvah. So this question is addressed by Rabbi Salah Zolti, the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, in his Sefer Mishnas Yaivetz. And he actually has two suggestions. Firstly, says Rabbi Zolti, it could be that this question relates to a very well-known discussion, dispute more correctly, between the Baal Halachas Gedolos, the Bahag, and other Rishonim, with regards to how many mitzvahs are involved in Sfiras HaOmer. The Bahag has a famous ruling whereby he says, essentially, or we're paraphrasing, but essentially, the entire 7 weeks are one mitzvah. And all the days are dependent on each other, interdependent, to the extent that if a person were to miss out a day, says Bahag, he's out of the count. I mean, his mitzvah is deficient. The mitzvah, this one mitzvah has 49 parts, and you need all 49. If you're missing one, you're out. Interestingly, he gets it from the word tamimos. Tamimos means it's got to be complete, and therefore the days are interdependent. Now, the other Rishonim, Tosfos, very strongly dispute this position, and as do almost all other Rishonim, these days are not dependent on each other, and if you miss one day, you can still continue to count. As we know, because of the... essentially, you could say that on a basic level, we adopt the halacha like most authorities, that each day is independent. And therefore, certainly, if a person missed a day, he absolutely has an obligation to count for the other days. They're separate mitzvahs, independent mitzvahs. However, with regards to making a bracha, that's when we take note of the Bahag. In view of the outstanding stature of the Bahag, he's from the time of the Gaonim, and his words are of such import that they can't be ignored, to the extent that no one makes a bracha as they count forward. So it's an interesting balance. You do count, because according to most opinions, you should, but without a bracha, because the Bahag said no. That's more or less where we are. Now, what's interesting is, now, set against this machlokas, essentially, if we would put it into one sentence, is Sfiras HaOmer one mitzvah with 49 parts, or 49 mitzvahs? But now look at the question of whether or not you make a bracha before you count each night, which we know, by the way, we do. But actually, the fact that we do would seem to work much better for one approach than the other. If you say that these are 49 mitzvahs, so each time you're doing your own mitzvah, and every your own mitzvah gets a bracha, as surely as a person benches every day or whenever, it's his own thing, and he makes a bracha. And so too with other things, Birchas HaTorah, every day. And for these 7 weeks, you have to count the Omer, and every day is its own mitzvah, and you make a bracha beforehand. However, with according to the Bahag, that essentially it's one mitzvah with 49 parts, there would be room to say that perhaps one should not make a bracha every day. Because what you're doing is really part of a mitzvah, but it's not a whole mitzvah. I mean, it's the equivalent of maybe making four brachas on Avraham Avinu. You pick up the lulav, you make gal netilas lulav. Pick up the eser, gal netilas eser. It's all a mitzvah, but they're all component parts of one bigger mitzvah. According to the Bahag, all the 49 days are component parts of a bigger mitzvah. So maybe either you should only make the bracha at the beginning, day one, and you should be motzi for all 7 weeks. But we know that's not true. But it's a chiddush. And therefore, says Rav Zolti, it could be that actually the Rambam is an ally for the Bahag. The Rambam is in league with the Bahag, as if to say the Rambam also understands that these are actually all one mitzvah that takes place over the course of 7 weeks, of 49 days. Ah, if it's all one mitzvah, so there would be ample room to think, you know what, maybe I don't make a bracha each night because I'm essentially encountering a 49th of a mitzvah. And that's why the Rambam saw necessary to mention here and to emphasize and to assert that no, notwithstanding the fact that it's all one mitzvah, nonetheless, every day as you do your daily part of that mitzvah, you make a bracha beforehand. That's a chiddush. That needed to be said. It's no longer seemingly redundant, and I could have inferred it from the Rambam's general principle. There's every room to think that this would be the exception to the rule. And to that end, the Rambam says no. So that is the first suggestion of Rav Zalti. But then he takes a different approach. There's a very interesting shaila which is discussed in a number of poskim, and that is it possible to fulfill the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer by writing what day it is in the Omer? And this is actually a minhag that people do. It's considered to be a very good thing. When you write to the Omer, you say the date, and then you say whatever day it is in the Omer. Okay. Could you potentially fulfill the mitzvah that way? What if a person, he missed a day? But then he reminds himself, oh, but I wrote a letter last night, so that's good, because I mentioned what day it is in writing. So does that work for you as part of the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer? Interestingly, the one of the famous discussions about this took place around the wedding of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Rabbi Akiva Eiger was brought up by his uncle, his maternal uncle, Rabbi Wolf Eiger. He took his mother's name, Rabbi Akiva Eiger, for various reasons that people needed to adopt certain names over there in Poland and Russia. And he was brought up actually by his uncle, but then he moved away. But he was so beloved in the town where his uncle was that when he got married, they had a wedding celebration in his uncle's town, even though he wasn't there, just to celebrate the fact that the young Rabbi Akiva Eiger was getting married. And his uncle then subsequently wrote him a letter telling him, we're so happy for you, and mazel tov, and we wish you well, and we had a whole party for you. And that takes just a few lines, because he's said all that. And then he proceeds to outline the discussion, the Torah discussion that they had in that wedding feast for Rabbi Akiva Eiger, who wasn't there. And he says, and we got discussing the question as to whether you could be Yotzei Sfiras HaOmer. Maybe you got married during the Omer, I don't know. Whether you could be Yotzei Sfiras HaOmer through writing the day of the Omer. And he proceeds to adduce all the proofs that were brought in that party. And this one said this way, this one said that way. And he lays out the whole thing. And then he says, and mazel tov again, and wish you all well. And anyway, I just thought you'd like to know. So then he gets a letter back from Rabbi Akiva Eiger. And it's actually a very similar type of letter where he says, thank you so much. I'm so happy you had this party for me. And wherever it's the Sheva Brachas here, it's all very busy, but everything's very well. And with regards to the question that you wrote about being Yotzei Sfiras HaOmer through counting, and then he just goes. And he discusses all the proofs that were brought. And then he says, anyway, that's with regards to Sfiras HaOmer. And thank you again for wishing me mazel tov. And then there's another exchange back and forth. And that becomes that correspondence becomes really a core part of the literature with regards to this question. But really, later poskim ponder really this whole thing as if to say, what is the background to this question? Could you be Yotzei Sfiras HaOmer through writing? After all, are we to understand that you could be Yotzei other mitzvahs through writing? What if a person needs to bench, and I don't know, they write faster than they speak? Could they write out the benching? Or so on and so forth. Or create Shema. What if they write out the Shema? The first pasuk of Shema, the first paragraph of Shema. Are you to understand that that could work? And some people indeed make a whole niche out of this, perceive that there really is a question as to whether writing could actually be a form of a substitute for verbal expression. It's no get to many other things. What if a person wrote that he vows that he will do something or won't do something? Is that valid as a neder or a shvua? He didn't say anything. Labate besosayim, etc. Anyway, but it could be that actually Sfiras HaOmer is unique. In some respects, we know that Sfiras HaOmer is unique. There is a halacha, interestingly, that when it comes to mitzvahs of speech, that are said in Lashon HaKodesh, your Yotze, even if you do not understand exactly what it is that you're saying, that's an important Yisod. For example, Hallel. If you say, oh, today is mitzvah to say Hallel. And a person says Hallel, he can read, but he doesn't really know what he's saying. So he's actually been Yotze the mitzvah of Hallel. There you go. However, says the Magen Avraham, and the Mishnah Berurah brings it the halacha, that's not true for Sfiras HaOmer. If someone says, we're counting the Omer, to repeat after me, and he says a bracha, and he says Hayom Shiva Yomim LaOmer, or whatever, and the person says after him, it's all Lashon HaKodesh, he said it word for word, he is absolutely not Yotze, says the Magen Avraham. But the question is, why not? I mean, manishtana ha-mitzvah zos, we call a mitzvah shebedibur. That with other things, with benching, and with halal, like we said, mikra megillah, all these things, if you say it in Lashon HaKodesh, as long as you said it right, you're yotze the mitzvah. But you said Sfiras HaOmer right, and you're not yotze. But why not? Now, there is another very interesting thing about Sfiras HaOmer. We have a principle. And the Vilna Gaon formulates it, but you can see it really earlier in Tosfos and earlier even than that. Sometimes the Torah will command something, Beloshen Yochid, using the singular, sometimes Beloshen Rabbim, using the plural. It tends to be that when the Torah commands something Beloshen Rabbim, it relates to everyone, to each and every individual. That's why it's in the plural, to each and every person, has that plurality to it. An example is Sfiras HaOmer, Usfartem Lachem. It's in the plural, because it's to all of you. And as the Gemara says, each person needs to count for themselves. Shetei Sfira Befi Kol Echad Ve'Echad. Were it to be in the singular, it could be different. And in fact, there is another type of counting which is phrased in the singular, and we're not familiar with it. V'Safarta Lecha, with regards to Shmita and Yovel and Parshas Bahar, also the Torah says, count for yourselves. Sheva Tzapshot Sonim, Sheva Shonim, Sheva Pa'amim, count the Shmita, count for the Yovel. And we don't do that. And in fact, we don't need to. The halacha is, that's a mitzvah for the Beis Din. Except, how do I know when it's a mitzvah for the Beis Din? Or for everyone, for each and every person? The answer is, look at the words. If it's phrased in the plural, it's for everyone. But if it's phrased in the singular, it's for the entire Jewish people as one unit, and they are represented by the Beis Din. And that's why it's only the Beis Din that really count off the where we're holding in the Shmita cycle, and Yovel, etc. So that's an important klal. However, it should lead us to a very interesting question. Because the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer is mentioned twice in the Torah. Our parsha is the first time, Parshas Emor. But it's also mentioned in Parshas Re'eh. Our parsha mentions the days, Parshas Re'eh mentions the weeks. And in Parshas Re'eh, it says, Shiva Shavuos Tispar Lach. Lach is the plural, Lacha. That's in the singular. So that's very interesting, because I thought we were told that Sfiras HaOmer is a mitzvah for everyone. And that's why it's in the plural. But now we're being given the mitzvah again, so to speak, in the singular. But what does that mean? And surprisingly, if we look in the Sifrei, to that pasuk, Sifrei in Parshas Re'eh, we will find, and I'll begin by the text of the Sifrei as we have it, Shiva Shavuos Tisbar Lach, which is the second expression of the mitzvah, Beis Din. That happens in Beis Din. The counting of the weeks happens in Beis Din. Ah, oh, so only Beis Din has to count? How do I know everybody else? Uminayin lekol echad ve'echad. How do I know that everyone has to count? Talmud Lomar takes us back to Emor, Usfartem Lachem. According to the standard reading of the Sifrei, that mitzvah of Shiva Shavuos Tisbar Lach is not a mitzvah for everyone. It is a mitzvah for the Beis Din. And that's why it's in the singular, because it's the Jewish people as one entity represented by the Beis Din. Now, it is important to note, the text of the Vilna Gaon is not that mitzvah is a mitzvah for the Beis Din. The Gaon's girsa is Yachol be-Beis Din. I might have thought it's a mitzvah for the Beis Din. Talmud Loma Usfartem Lachem. So it's saved at the last moment through Usfartem Lachem, and it's a mitzvah for everyone. But certainly without that, I would have thought it's a mitzvah on the Beis Din. And the question is, where is this coming from? Why either is it a mitzvah for the Beis Din, or would I think it's a mitzvah for the Beis Din? What's it got to do with them? Well, the truth is, and this analysis is from a separate talk, but it's from Rav Osher Weisschlita. The role of the Beis Din is really that of achrayus. Isn't that so? That they need to be responsible for the Jewish people. Now, that responsibility can take a number of forms. It can either be responsible that everyone's behaving properly, keeping halacha as they should. That's one type of responsibility. But it's also, they need to be responsible to be sure that everything is as it should in terms of the luach. Right, their job is to be Mekadosh the Chodesh. Their job is to make sure that everyone keeps Shavuos. And of course, Shavuos traces back to Pesach. So there's a mitzvah for someone to be keeping account of where we are in the count. That's part of the Achrayus, to make sure that Shavuos comes in. This is their contribution to Shavuos, as surely as they contribute to every Moed. That's in the realms of the Beis Din. And as such, one may have thought that the count only exists for the Beis Din. Because if it's all about just making sure where you are within the count, keeping in mind, where are we? How long since Pesach? How long to Shavuos? That's what it's all about. To halt kop, as they say. So then I might think that's purely entirely within the jurisdiction of the Beis Din. Talmud Lomar, no, everyone has a mitzvah to count. That's a chiddush. But what we do discover is that this is really the nature of Sfiras HaOmer. It's about maintaining an awareness of where you are within the count. But if that is at the heart of the mitzvah, so isn't it interesting though that we need to verbalize it? You need to state beferish what day it is. You can't be aware without saying. You do need to say. But we understand now, it's a delicate point. Speech when it comes to Sfiras HaOmer is different than speech with other mitzvahs. With other mitzvahs, there's a mitzvah to read the Megillah. There's a mitzvah to say Shema. Here, the mitzvah is to know where you are. You say it as a way of expressing it. But that is an expression of the essential mitzvah, which is to maintain awareness of where you are within the count. And that is why you are not Yotzei Sfiras HaOmer if you do not know what you've said, because you've missed the entirety of the mitzvah. You've given verbal expression, but it's an expression to something that you don't have because you don't know what you said. So it doesn't mean that doesn't represent your awareness of where you are in the count. That's why this mitzvah is different than others. With other mitzvahs, there's a mitzvah to say Halah and to say Shema, etc. But here, the mitzvah is to know where you are in the count. Express it through words, but if you express it but you don't know, that's nothing. And therefore, says Rav Zolti, there's room to say, and now we begin to understand that whole discussion that took place with Rabbi Akiva Eger and his uncle, could you be Yotzei through writing? And we don't find that discussion with other mitzvahs necessarily. But why would we find it here? But once we understand, again, it's a delicate point, but speech is not the ikkar with regards to Sfiras HaOmer, because if you only speak but you don't know, you haven't been Yotzei the mitzvah. So speech is an expression. Ah, if the mitzvah is to know, but the halacha says you have to express it through speech, so maybe you could be Yotzei expressing it another way, like in writing. In that respect, it's no different. As soon as we've taken it out of the pure, so to speak, category of verbal mitzvahs, so you speak it just to express it, but if it's all about expression, you could express it in other ways, you could write it. And that's why it becomes such a viable possibility that's discussed in that way. Well, we have a principle from Maharal, and that is a mitzvah which primarily is one of the heart, you don't make a bracha on. And according to, this is it finds expression even with the Beis Yosef, actually, Rabbi Yosef Cairo, that's why there's no mitzvah on bittel chametz, because bittel is in the heart. It's always you, the bracha always follows an action, beer chametz, in fact. And if that's the case, and this is the sort of Maharal says it as his answer as to why we don't make a bracha on the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, on Seder night, of which many answers have been given. But according to the Maharal, it's so about the feeling of appreciation, that's really where the mitzvah is, that it is not a pure verbal mitzvah even, which is a chiddush. And that's why you don't make a bracha on it. At any rate, if that's the case, and we've come this far, says Rav Zolti, perhaps this is another way of understanding why the Rambam saw fit or necessary to emphasize that you make a bracha before you count the Omer. Because if it's true that a mitzvah which is primarily about awareness or a feeling or knowledge, and not primarily about speech or deed, you don't make a bracha, like for example, bittul chametz. And if the ikkar of Sfiras HaOmer is essentially awareness of where you are, there would be room to think that you don't make a bracha on Sfiras HaOmer because you don't make a bracha on something that's in the mind or in the heart. And to that end, says the Mishnah Shaivetz, perhaps this is the reason why the Rambam saw it as necessary to emphasize as much as the ikkar is awareness, as we've said, but the verbal expression is so much a part of it that it catches a bracha. You make a sheker ishano, it says with Sivano before you count the Omer. Well, we've said quite a bit this evening, and perhaps just to conclude with a thought about Sfiras HaOmer. It is nonetheless something of a curious mitzvah. Every night we count, and sometimes we finish counting and we're not quite sure what happened. And then we start to say other things because we don't know what else to do. But Rav Hirsch said, the counting of the Omer is a statement. It is a statement about Pesach, essentially. And what Pesach is for. Pesach is Man Chereseinu, the time of our freedom. For many nations, says Rav Hirsch, freedom is essentially the end game. As if to say, it is, that's what they're looking towards. And once they're free, that's it. And the notion of now that we're free, what will we use this for, or what will this take us to, isn't necessarily, they like to maintain law and order. They don't want chaos. But the notion that freedom is the beginning is not to be found. In his words, freedom is for other nations is the day that they count towards. Understandably so. But as far as the Torah is concerned, freedom is the day that you count from. It's not the day that you stop counting. It's the day that you start counting. Because now you have an opportunity, but you have to use it for something. Because if you don't use it for anything, and you subscribe to a concept which is called freedom for freedom's sake, the means becomes an end, well, freedom for freedom's sake, as a wise man once said, is an unacceptable liberty. And these are also concepts which are well worth our contemplation. Seder night is a night of appreciation. If we have freedom, we need to appreciate it. And we devote a night to that. But by the next night, you're already counting as if to say, okay, we have it, what are we going to do with it? And the answer is it has to lead you up to Sinai and to make full use of the freedom that we have. Mitzvah Shem, we've begun a count, it should be culminate in the realization of everything that freedom is and should be for.